I didn't finish even one of the sections. Not even one. We watched him trudge into his house. "Is he going to be all right?" Rana asked. "He'll bounce back pretty soon. I'm worried about what happens when the results come in." "You ought to be worried about your own scores." "Dad told me I have to take it 3 times and use the best score. I'll take the SAT, too. I don't need to obsess over every test. Dad does that for me."
"Have it your way."
"What are you doing the rest of the afternoon?"
"Nothing."
"Wrong." Rana slid off her shoes and propped her feet on the dashboard. "You're taking me to Houston. To the zoo."
"The zoo?"
"You know, animals. Seals, elephants, lions and tigers and bears. Oh my."
Chapter 15. Rana told me this was all about fathers. Young's grandfather was a heart surgeon of some renown, but his father was a small-town GP. I think he saw his own shortcomings in Young. Bob's father wanted an athlete, but Bob was the scaredest kid I'd ever seen. I didn't know Rob's dad, but, of course, we all heard the story later. John Ronald Perry. Sunday, I spent the day at Rana's. We played croquet on the front lawn with her parents and younger brother. The whole Perry clan was as aggressive as they were loud. The crack of the wooden mallets against the brightly colored balls sounded like bones breaking. They aimed at one another and, placing a triumphant foot on their own ball, banged the mallet down and sent their opponents shooting through the fallen leaves. When Rana won the first game, she raised her fist and shouted, "Yay, me!" "Humility is not your strong suit," I groused, returning from the drainage ditch with my ball. Rana's dad came over, swinging his mallet. "Anyone for a rematch?" "My ego can't take that much abuse, sir." Mr. Perry's laugh filled the yard. It probably rattled the windows. "I like this one, Ron. Keep him around a while." He tramped away, his stride long and loping. "You seem a bit overwhelmed," Rana said, taking my hand. "Or also..." I trailed off, searching. "Alive?" "Definitely. And boisterous. And rowdy. You like one another?"
"Of course. We're a family. We have to like each other."
"Don't be so sure," I said. She tugged me behind a huge azalea bush. "Kiss me, or I shall become violent," she whispered. She tightened her arms around my neck. I kissed her and felt the tip of her tongue touch my own. "I'm crazy about you, Rana." She murmured, rubbing her cheek against my collar. "You're just crazy." I kissed her again, soft as a butterfly landing. "That too." I free-floated through the next week, quick meetings with Rana between classes, her joining our crowd at the table and rubbing her toes against my ankle, taking her home and kissing her, overheating my engine on the den couch. Bobster was still living on the edge, teaching Simon to drive. Coop worked out to the point of sweaty obsession, and Rob twitched our strings by making sure we gave Simon the proper amount of our attention. "We have to keep up Simon's momentum," Rob said. Simon kicked into forward motion on Project Lance. The student office workers were kept busy delivering slips, summoning Ansley to the attendance office. He lost class time scrambling from one teacher to another, validating his presence in their classes. He groaned about computer glitches and begged his friends for class notes. The teachers were annoyed and the office suspected foul play. Lance was just confounded, and it made him mean. At school a few days later, Rob and Simon had their heads together more than usual. The next day, the bells rang in the middle of first period. Mrs. Parks looked up as if God were responsible. The bells rang in 15 or 20-second intervals, then the lights blinked and strobed. Deputy Dog came on the intercom, but it squealed and fritzed on and off like the lights. Finally, the deputy sent runners around to each teacher. After a short conference in the hall, Mrs. Parks came back into the room. Something seems to have gone awry with the computer-controlled electrical system. It appears this will not be a quick fix, as that semi-literate young man expressed so eloquently. School is dismissed for today. We cheered. For once, I concur. We scattered into the halls and headed for the parking lot before Deputy Dog could change his mind. Rob surveyed the huge knot of people in the lot and climbed up on the roof of Bigfoot, Larry Dawkins's jacked-up four-wheel drive pickup truck. "Ladies and gents, your attention, please. Meet the man responsible for your surprise vacation." He waved down to someone. "Come up here and accept your well-deserved applause. Simon Glass, Mr. Computer Maniac." Glass was pushed up onto the bed of Bigfoot. His skin pinked as he bowed and raised his hands. "I just sort of tinkered with the bells," he began. "Old Tinker Bell his own self," Lance Ansley bellowed. The crowd was having none of it. First came the silence, then grumbling, then angry faces turned on Lance, and people began booing and hissing. While everyone else watched Lance heatedly bullying his way out of the hostile crowd, I watched Rob cross his arms over his chest and smile. Glass turned back to the crowd and pumped his fist in the air. "You know, guys, in school it's us against them, and this time us won. Have a good day." Simon crossed his arms over his chest. I doubt the imitation of Rob was unplanned, but for the first time, Simon looked like he was where he wanted to be. Rana's mom and dad were at work, and her little brother was at school. We curled into the couch. "You hate it when Simon takes control, don't you? Especially now that he's smoothing out his rough edges." "Hush," I said. "No psychology 101 today." "Fine by me." She kissed me, long and deep. "Young?" "Hmm?" "Have you... you know... have you ever..." "Have I what?" I murmured, running my tongue along the hollow of her throat. "You know what I'm asking." I hesitated, then the light blinked on. "Oh, that. Answer me. Have you?" Rana nuzzled my neck. "That depends. Do you want me to lie, or do you want the truth?" She sighed. "I've always said that a good lie is better than ugly reality, but this time I want the truth." The image of the camp counselor flitted through my head like a bat. I chased it away. "All right." "Yes, I have. Once. And it was lousy. It was one of those, I've got to get this done so I can be a real guy kind of things." She pulled back and studied my face. "I have too. Almost the same thing. He wanted to, and I wanted to please him. But I decided that the next time it would be different. That I had to want it for me." "And?" I asked. "And I don't think you've ever seen my room." We climbed the stairs together. She closed the blinds and stood there. I couldn't decide if she was nervous or waiting for me to make the move. I put one hand on each side of her face and kissed her. She slid her hands under my shirt. Her lips moved against my ear. "I want to show you that you're special." And she did. Chapter 16. Doesn't anybody get it? Maybe 5 years in and out of therapy has given me insight you normal people don't have. Those boys looked at Simon Glass and each saw a reflection of what he hated most about himself. That's what happened when Simon saw me. I might be a little crazy, but I'm not dense. But if I'm that smart, why didn't I see through the Lance game? Same reason the others didn't see through Rob. It was something I wanted, so I chose not to see. Alice Danvers. The next day before class, we stood around the commons, shooting the shit. Lance hung on the fringes, but everyone pretty much ignored him and peppered Glass with questions about the great bell caper. I eyed the crowd, hoping for a distraction. I got one. Dallas Alice, the school's female outcast, sidled up to Lance like a lanky spider. Then she just stood. Alice was 6 feet tall and weighed about 12 pounds. Lance glanced at her, surprised and unsure of what to do. Alice stood and batted her eyes and giggled. Rana appeared at my side. "Look at that," she whispered. "Dallas Alice is trying to flirt." It was like watching a giraffe put on a girdle. Lance got edgy and kind of sidestepped away. Alice slid toward him and smiled. This weird mating dance continued until Lance whispered out of the side of his mouth, "What gives, Alice?"
"I just wanted to thank you for the card, Lance."
"What card?" Lance demanded, his voice staying low but urgent. Something like confusion or even suspicion flashed through Alice's face. She slid away. Bobster called after her, "Don't waste your time, Alice." He held up the hand, sporting his senior ring. "I'll bet Ansley's dick could slide through my ring." Lance wheeled on Bob, but a voice stopped his fist.
"Lance, is this a new romance?"
It was Simon. Lance turned purple. "Shove it, Glass," he growled. He jabbed his index finger toward Bob. "I'll take care of you later." He stalked off. After that, it was a barrage of cruelty. "Happy birthday to Alice from Lance" appeared on the marquee outside the school. A bouquet of balloons arrived in Alice's homeroom soon after. The card was signed, "Yours, Lance." Lance couldn't appear anywhere without catcalls and crude jokes. Now that a former outcast and a present one had publicly embarrassed him, Lance might as well have been covered in open sores. He stayed in the parking lot until classes started and ate lunch alone. He walked to class, head down, speaking to no one. Alice dogged his every move.
"I don't get her," I said. "Why can't she smell the sewer? She's got to know this is a setup."
Rana's face saddened.
"Why?"
"She's seen Simon go from toad to class hero. She's seen Lance lose his girl and his popularity. And she's got to be losing brain cells along with pounds. She has no clue about how to act. And somebody's convincing her that Lance likes her. Why does she believe it? It's her only chance to be normal."
"Nobody's that dumb," I said.
"Not dumb. Desperate." Rana took my hand. "Who's doing this to her? And why?" After lunch, Rob and I watched Lance walk past a pickup basketball game. I guess Lance knows how Simon felt now. Always on the outside. Rob smiled. "Nope. Lance has it worse. He knows what it's like to have been on the inside." I looked at Rob, wondering what he had lost, besides his last name. The Saturday after Thanksgiving, Mr. and Mrs. Perry took Rana's little brother to his soccer game. His team was in the finals and the game was being played in Houston. He would play two games, one in the morning and one in the late afternoon. They would be gone until late. We observed the holiday by spending the afternoon under the snowflake white comforter on Rana's bed. "You're smooth everywhere," I mused, stroking her silky back. "I wish I knew how to purr," Rana murmured. "It would be so appropriate." She laid her head on my chest. "I can hear your heart beating." "It does that pretty regular this time of day." Just then my stomach grumbled. Rana pulled away, rubbing her ear. "I think there's been an earthquake." She lay back against her pillow. We did sort of skip lunch. "You're all the nourishment I need." I said it in a fakey voice, but I meant it. "Maybe so, but you've never had a thickery." "A thickery?" "Yep, a Perry tradition. It is to die for." She slid from the bed, flicked my sweatshirt from the floor, and tugged it over her head. It hung off her hands and hit her mid-thigh. I had never seen anything quite so beautiful. "I love you, Ron." She curtsied. "Thank you, kind sir, but you'll love me more in a few minutes." She crawled onto the bed and kissed me. "Don't go anywhere." "Can't. You got my clothes." "Aren't you lucky? I'm gorgeous and smart." She slipped away. I tried to grab the edge of the sweatshirt, but she was too quick. "And you're so humble," I added. She crossed her eyes, stuck out her tongue, and sashayed out the door. I crossed my hands behind my head. I was buoyant, and it was more than the high of sex. A few minutes later, Rana bounced back into the room. "A thickery, food of the gods." She held in each hand two huge chocolate chip cookies with a center of vanilla ice cream. The whole thing was about 3 inches thick. "A thickery," I said, taking one with two hands. Rana bit into hers, closed her eyes, and hummed in delight. I took a bite. The cookie was crisp and crumbly, the chocolate chips rich, and the cold ice cream satiny on my tongue. We took another bite and caught each other's eyes over the cookies. Rana crunched down, smiling as she swallowed. "You know, young, this is as good as anything gets. I wonder if this is it. Is this the very best day I'll ever have?" I traced my finger down her nose. "I hope not, Ron. I want this to go on forever." But it didn't. Chapter 17. How did I know about Bob and the ring? Simon told me. I thought he was just being nice. He said he was telling me so I wouldn't notice it was missing and ask Bob about it. It never crossed my mind to wonder how Simon knew the story. Not then. Ginger Donaldson. We took Glass to the Department of Motor Vehicles for his written exam. We shoved him in front of us until he reached the counter, where an emaciated man with thick trifocals eyed us with ingrained adult suspicion. As they moved through the layers of his lenses, his eyes wavered as if underwater. "Who's taking the test?" he growled in a surprisingly deep voice. We pointed at Simon. "Him." "Don't tell me. You're his mother's, right?" "Almost," Bobster said. "We more or less gave birth to the new Simon." "Did you kill the old one or just trade him in?" "Seriously, sir. We're kind of a support system. Cheerleaders." Rob turned on his charm, full wattage. It bounced off the clerk without making a dent. The clerk slapped the test on the counter. "Answer every question, bub. Sit over there. Turn it in to me when you're through. Any questions?" "No, sir. It seems self-explanatory." Simon sat down and hunched over the test. He scanned the test and picked up the pencil. In 10 minutes, he looked up, scanned the test again, and brought it to the front counter. "What do you want?" the skinny man sneered. "If you had questions, you should have asked them before you started."
"No questions, sir. Do you grade it now?"
"You finished?"
"Turning it in?"
Glass nodded.
"You answered all the questions like I told you?"
"Yes, sir."
"Do you grade it now?"
"Hold your horses."
He snatched the test from Simon's fingers and shuffled to a small desk behind the counter. Scraping a chair back, he sat, his bones making a loose pile in the chair. He pulled an answer key over Simon's paper, adjusted his trifocals, and leaned over the test, his red pen ready for action. We gathered at the counter and watched. The pen never moved. Finally, the geezer